Juneteenth is a commemoration of when Texas belatedly got news about the Emancipation Proclamation, which ended slavery in the Confederacy. Recognition of that day picked up traction in the past year as racial protests swept through the nation. This year will be the first time Louisville recognizes it as an official holiday for workers. On this show, we hear about Juneteenth, the history, the purpose, and this year's celebration. Also, June is Pride Month, and leaders from two different groups will explain why celebrating the LGBTQ plus communities is more important than ever. I am Associate Producer Michelle Tyrene Johnson, filling in for Rick Howlett. Today on In Conversation, we'll talk about Pride Month and Juneteenth. That's this hour on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Associate Producer Michelle Tyrene Johnson, filling in for Rick Howlett. A little later in the program, we'll hear from Rodney Kaufman, the president of Kentuckiana Pride, on the importance of celebrating LGBTQ plus communities and uplifting people who are out and proud. We'll also talk to James Alcantara, founder of a new organization called Black Trans Louisville that highlights the Black trans community. We'll talk about why Pride celebrations are important to elevate the diversity within the diversity. But first, we talk about a new city holiday that honors an old but significant event, Juneteenth. Juneteenth is one of the more notable celebrations around the emancipation of slaves at the end of the Civil War. Wanda Mitchell Smith is one of the organizers of the city's inaugural Juneteenth celebration. Okay, so tell me a little bit about the Juneteenth Commission.
The Juneteenth, well, actually, the name is the Juneteenth Jubilee Celebration Commission. And I don't know if you know the history, but let me give it to you very quickly here. On February the 1st, the mayor wanted to elevate what he had done the year before. And so he gave the Metro employees the day off and for Juneteenth to recognize the history. So this past February, he decided, well, can we take this a little bit further? And he elevated by really forming a commission. And the commissioners are from all walks of life, and they have so much to bring to the table. And it is extremely a diverse commission to be able to work on how we can improve and really recognize the holiday for what it truly is for our history. And so that's what we've been working on since February the 1st.
Question. So yes. The commission is new, but the city's celebration, the city's event isn't new. Is that right?
They are new because okay. Some of them are new, some of them are not. And the waterfront for the past 2 years looked at Juneteenth as something that they wanted to be inclusive of in theirs. And so what this did was just made it a more formality for everyone to be able to honor and celebrate.
Okay. So the city has been part of Juneteenth celebrations in the past, but this sounds like this is the first official celebration.
Well, it's the more formalized, I guess, on bringing everyone together to be able to do this.
Okay.
Because he did it, Mayor Fisher did it through an executive order honoring this day and developing the commission. In the previous year, he did another executive order where the people would be able to actually look at it for the holiday that it deserves to be by giving the employees off. And so hopefully, moving on in the future, that we will be able to gain more prominence with other employers to want to follow the lead and to give their people the day off as well. Now, I'm not speaking from the mayor's perspective. I'm speaking from Wanda's perspective that as this grows historically, that we're, hoping that everyone will jump on board and recognize this for what it truly is for our community as a whole.
Right. And I guess I was just trying to differentiate between the day And because I know that Mayor Fisher signed an executive order last year making this the first official holiday for city employees. I was talking more about the celebrations itself. Like, isn't there a big festival or big? I mean,
there are going to be so many things to be going on. So we the commissioners looked at this holistically. We wanted to be able to have the educational principles as well as fun things to be able to happen throughout our city, as well as health initiatives. So there are going to be things to go on the course of the day at various locations. And if you go to our website, www.JuneteenthLou.com, then you will be able to see so many events that are going to be listed there. Listen, we have from the West End on over to some things that are going to be going on a little south of us, as well as right down here in the heart of Louisville. We're going to be looking at dedication of the Unknown Project that Hannah Drake has led. We're looking at 4th Street Live that our own Heritage Center is producing over there, as well as there will be vendors and all types of things of that nature to go on over there. And I stated to you in referencing to, Norton's healthcare, there is going to be a complete wellness act to go on down at the waterfront so that individuals who have not had COVID testing or shots, they can go down there. We have opened it up so that younger people will be able to receive the vaccine. And it's all free of charge. There are going to be other screenings and things of that nature to go on down there. So that's going to be from 12 noon until 3. So there are all types of things that if you go to the website, you will find a lot more information than just in our conversation here.
Right. And I just want to be clear. Is this the first year that the city is doing all these events? Is this just an ongoing thing?
The city as a whole, I will say, is the first year where we have collectively been able to do this. But I do want to recognize Waterfront Park for having some things, you know, prior to now.
No, I understand. I do get that.
This is our alpha of everything that we're doing this year.
Right. Okay. Again, the timing of things matters in the sense that if something is inaugural, we want to recognize that and comment on that. But if something has been going on for years, I don't want to make it seem like this is the first year that it's happening.
No, this is, I mean, just to be able to have it in this celebratory manner when we started the process, you know, from my perspective, I was like, okay, so how are we going to make everyone want to be a part of this? And we didn't have to do a whole lot to do this. It was like a fire that just kind of ran from heart to heart and breast to breast that everyone wanted to honor. And so there are so many that were coming on board, so many that were really wanting to have events, so many, you know, but we were entrapped by COVID, but fortunately, it's been fluid to that point where we're waiting to hear what we can do. But fortunately for us, we've been able to come out from up under so many COVID restrictions so that we can be able to have the type of celebration as it should be.
Great, great, great. And are you the person who's sort of in charge of coordinating all the different things?
I am one, and I led the charge this year, but I am one of the rest of these commissioners, and I am the mayor's. I was honored to be the mayor's representative since I am in his office. Yes.
Gotcha. So why do you think it's important to note Juneteenth? I mean, for people who are listening who still don't know what Juneteenth is, well, how do you describe it?
It is, I'm lost for words because it is an emotional task for us who have been, you know, who our history and our ancestors have been enslaved. And there is no recognition for what we have given, you know, over the course of the history of these United States. As a matter of fact, the national Juneteenth colors are red, white, and blue. And so, you know, a lot of people like, well, that's more like the flag, that's more like this. But when you think about it, and it's something that Councilman Arthur speaks about passionately, it is the America colors, yes. But who built America except for those who were enslaved? So we should be able to caress the colors. We should be able to caress our history. And this history is not just for the Black people in Louisville, Kentucky. It's for all people. All people need to know and understand what we each, what our ancestries has brought to the table of forming the United States of America.
And that brings up a really great question. Do you feel as if the Breonna Taylor protest, if that raised the awareness, turned up the dial a little bit on people's
beyond
interest?
A shadow of a doubt, you know, and everything. And it's made people who didn't look at it from various eyes to look at it so differently and to say, you know, that, yeah, there are some biases and we need to deal with those biases. And we need to understand more about, you know, what is going on and what has happened. But when we look at just that one case, just go back in your mind in history when, you know, when we were not embodied as, you know, as the people. And we have so many contributions that we have made to this nation. Let's look at the traffic light. Let's look at blood plasma. And you can go on and on and on from our history perspective on what we have brought to the table but wasn't recognized for that. This is just a small part of opening up the educational opportunity that can create for everyone to look at the people as a whole and not just a part.
That was Wanda Mitchell Smith, Mayor Greg Fisher's appointment to the Juneteenth Commission, talking about how the city is commemorating this emancipation celebration. We'll be back with much more about Juneteenth after the break. And later in the show, we'll talk about Pride Month and its importance. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson in Louisville, filling in for Rick Howlett. Let's get back to Wanda Mitchell Smith, Metro Council Liaison and Juneteenth Jubilee Commissioner. Do you think that there are people who will take maybe more seriously Juneteenth because the city has made it a holiday for the city workers?
Well, that's my prayers, and I would like to think so, that they would, you know, look at doing that. You know, hopefully we'll be able to expound upon it next year, next June 19th, you know, and we'll go from there. You know, one of the goals that the commission has is not to just celebrate it for, you know, this is our first time out of the chute, and so we did 4 days, you know, we starting Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, culminating with a praise and worship, ecumenical worship at Burnett Avenue Baptist Church on Hurstbourne Lane. But with that said, you know, we would like to see it be expounded for the entire week of sorts and to kind of mirror what we know that happens in Louisville, Kentucky with Derby. Mm-hmm. If we could do that for a horse race, surely we could do that for people.
Boy,
I'm just saying.
I, you know, I'm glad you said it. That's a really good way of putting it. I mean, this is a city that is very used to long celebrations of singular events. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. What is it that you would want people to do who hear about Juneteenth but just really haven't gone beyond hearing Juneteenth, Black people, something happened. What is it you'd want people to do?
Well, you know, I want them to know what it's all about, number one. So the education principle is there for a better understanding, and so that we can have, you know, those hard dialogues that need to happen, you know, and everything as we move into where we're going at 2022. For 2022, we're looking at so many different facets and elements that we want to be able to promote, that we want to be able to have happen. But my hope and my desire is for people's eyes to be open and for the realness to come apart and for us to be stitched together as one unified body in Louisville, Kentucky, you know, with all people understanding. I will share with you that years ago, and I'm dating myself, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But years ago, we used to have the Heritage Weekend on the Belvedere. And it was very interesting, and it was very economical for those who could not afford to go out and to do various things. But during those festivities, you learn so much about different cultures, you know, and everything. So we need to caress it for what it really is. The history is what it is, but we need to open our minds to be able to accept it and to be able to grow together. And yes, talk about things and say, why is this way? What changes can we make? What changes can we make in law? What changes can we make that is going to edify our community as a whole? And to stop with the separating ourselves. We are one body in Christ. And I hope that you don't find offense in that, but as a minister called by God, that's a whole lot of who I am. So as one body, we need to function as such. Just so that you'll know, we're praying that all these things can happen for next year, but we're wanting to promote what we're going to be looking like on next year with parade, with HBCU's showcase, with the Battle of the Bands, with a gala. And with the health fair and so much more entertainment, and, you know, and for the visual arts camp to be able to grow so that we can be able to use that as an offspring for other things that the commission would like to do.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask about a parade, because I know that several cities around the country have parades as part of their Juneteenth celebrations.
Yes.
But is that going to be, will you be able to have a parade this year?
Not this year, because we just came, you know, we're just trying to fill out where we are, but there are going to be drum lines to lead off the unknown project that is going to be happening over at 102 Roots?
101 Roots.
Roots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 101 Roots, excuse me, please. You know, and so this is the bench project that has been worked on in conjunction with a grant that was given from Metro Arts. So, you know, and the project is going to culminate at 10th and Main, but that is the extent of where that is happening. Because as we were going through this process, things kept changing every day,
yeah,
you know, or
absolutely.
Every 2 weeks with COVID.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing that we wanted to do was to be able to protect people, but also to be able to honor the day. And so we, you know, it was very fluid, and we had to make those changes as we, you know, as we started changing with COVID. So that was something that we wasn't able to have this year, but we are working on that for next year. And a part of it is that we are really wanting to get our HBCU bands here so that they can be a part of that parade and celebration.
Well, let me just tell you, I personally love myself a good drum line. So, you know,
I'm telling you,
if that's all you can do for a parade,
and these are young people. I'm sure that you've heard of them, and they're going to, oh gosh, it's right now. of the drummers, but they are known throughout our city, and we're excited to be able to have them to come on.
That's great. That's absolutely great.
It's River City Drum Corps. Thank you so much, River City Drum Corps. I want to give them their plug.
Right. Well, thank you, Wanda. This has been great. I really appreciate your talking to me about the Juneteenth celebration, giving some context and some history and all those good things. And I just want to thank you very much for being a guest on In Conversation. That was Wanda Mitchell-Smith with the city's Juneteenth Commission. Next, we'll hear from University of Kentucky professor Derek White. This interview was recorded for WFPL's podcast, Race Unwrapped. Professor White and I talk about how Juneteenth can be used as a shorthand in conversations about race. This season, which is the second season, I am exploring the language of race and how people use words and phrases to convey both what they think they're conveying and then to convey something that's more like subtext, which is what our particular talk is going to be about. But before we get to that, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Derek White. I'm a professor of history, African American and Africana studies at the University of Kentucky. Born and raised in Lexington, and worked my way through academia to somehow be like 5 minutes from my parents. So that's an amazing story.
I know. Sometimes it's like we're going to go to the next generation, do different things. I'm back.
Exactly.
Oh, I know. I get it. Trust me. I get it. The one I wanted to talk with you about is how the use of certain words or events or even names can sort of serve as a shorthand. And two words that came to mind, one is Juneteenth. I feel like Juneteenth has taken on this new thing in our society that's bigger than the thing itself. What do you think about that?
I mean, Juneteenth is an event that has, I think, morphed into a national event, which initially it was very much a regional event. And, you know, growing up here in Kentucky, I don't really recall, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, a big Juneteenth conversation or celebration. But my brain is a little hazy because of COVID after, you know, a year, so I can't quite remember it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that's really clear about Juneteenth, I think, that's happened since 2000 for sure, is that what was a Texas-based celebration, right, that talks about the end of slavery in Texas after the Civil War, which comes, you know, months after the surrender, becomes kind of a shorthand, as you said, for the way that Black folks have celebrated kind of Emancipation Day, right? And mm-hmm. Emancipation Day, the concept that Black folks had celebrated their emancipation broadly from slavery is a common holiday that has been that is celebrated at different places and different times all throughout the country. So for many Black communities over, you know, since the mid 19th century, you know, Emancipation Day was January 1st, right? Because January 1st marked the beginning of the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. But other states and other regions, obviously, the state of Kentucky, for instance, did not fall under the purview of the Emancipation Proclamation. And so Black folks here in this state, my ancestors, continue to work and to continue to be enslaved, well, at least until the end of the Civil War.
Wow.
In the state of Florida, for instance, I used to work in Florida, so I know this a little bit off the top of my head, is that their Emancipation Day is May 20th, right? This is the day that the word gets to the state of Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Because part of what's mm-hmm. happening is that they're only that once we see the surrender, I think in March, April of 1865, it takes time for, you know, federal troops to enforce the order on the fringes the Confederacy, right? So in a state like Florida, it takes a while for that to actually come into being till federal troops kind of roll into town and remind folks and announce in this, you know, in the town square that that the Civil War is over and that folks who are formerly enslaved are now free. And this is the same story in Juneteenth. And so I think that what happens is that Juneteenth has become in some ways a shorthand amongst Black communities over the last probably two decades in the Black communities of celebrating Emancipation Day.
Mm-hmm. I even saw it in Wikipedia where it was synonymous. And it's like, those are the same days. That's like saying Christmas and Thanksgiving are the same holiday because they're, you know, just a few weeks apart.
Yeah, no, it is, you know, and I think that that's a very, and I think local communities at one point in time celebrated Emancipation Days based on, you know, their local understanding of emancipation, right? And I think that as we've become a national, you know, travel communication has been able to reduce the distances between communities. We in Black communities in some ways have accepted Juneteenth as an effective shorthand. And I think it's important because one of the things about the traditional Emancipation Day that we see that used to be celebrated on January 1st is that, you know, that gets phenomena that gets overtaken by New Year's. Right. And so, mm-hmm. You lose that. And so Black communities have this still invested. If you have night watch service, for instance, you grew up in Black church, right? On New Year's Eve, a lot of the ideas and concepts of Emancipation Day are built into to that service as well. But Juneteenth, I think, is a really, you know, in some ways, it's a great time, right? It's not the 4th of July, right?
Which has its own
Memorial
complicated
Day
history.
Right. It's not Memorial Day, which Black folks had created in many ways, which was Decoration Day after the Civil War that gets usurped in the 1920s by the federal government. And so Juneteenth becomes a really good space for Black communities to celebrate their emancipation in a way that had not been, is not complicated by the July 4th. Narrative and has not been superseded by, you know, the federal Memorial Day, which obscured its kind of, African-American origins after the Civil War. And so Juneteenth is like ours, right? Like it's like one of those dates and names and things that we could do. And then you put that in a particular moment, both in the Obama administration having a Black presidency, so he at least acknowledging that Juneteenth is something important, and then in the Trump administration where Black folks are feeling like they need to assert their kind of racial identity in this kind of hostile national politics and political moment, Juneteenth begins to take on a particular meaning. And then I think last year, I think Juneteenth going forward is going to have a new kind of meaning, right? After the summer of 2020.
See, I was going to ask you that too. Don't you think it means something for white people now, for people who aren't Black now? I mean, like, it's literally a holiday, one of our holidays at the place where I work here now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, at the University of Kentucky, we announced that we're getting Juneteenth off. And I felt that that was, so I think part of it is now going to get, involved in and ensnared in these broader kind of diversity and inclusion. And many organizations are looking for, dare I say it, easy diversity and inclusion wins and victories. And so Juneteenth for them is like, let's acknowledge this as a holiday and let's go forward. Corporations, universities, cities are looking for easy kind of wins that signal that they are supportive of Black communities, and Juneteenth functions as an easy win. Or you can invoke Breonna Taylor's name and it gets invoked in bad faith, right? Like, and so I think that there's a lot of risk involved. And I think that, you know, this is any language, right? Anytime we use words and they leave our mouths into the all broader public where I write certain things, they come up for broader interpretation and use. And you don't control any of that after the fact. But we should be, as thinking parts of communities, we should be aware and really identify the ways in which individuals try to use this in bad faith and hold them accountable.
That was Professor Derek White in an excerpt from WFPL's podcast, Race Unwrapped. You can find that podcast at wfpl.org/raceunwrapped. When we come back after the break, we'll be talking with two guests about Pride Month. Rodney Kaufman, the president of Kentuckiana Pride, and James Alcantara, founder of a new organization for Louisville's Black trans community. This is In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. Welcome back to In Conversation on 89.3 WFPL and Kentucky Public Radio. I'm associate producer Michelle Tyrene Johnson, sitting in for Rick Howlett. It's Pride Month, so we'll hear now from Rodney Kaufman, the president of Kentuckiana Pride, about what Pride means and how it will be celebrated. For those who may not know what Pride celebrates, could you tell us?
Sure. Basically, Pride allows members of the LGBTQ plus community and any allies to come together to celebrate themselves, where they can be safe, they can be happy, they don't have to downplay. I remember back in the day, you didn't want to be out. Today, I feel I have a freedom, and I feel liberated to say I'm a gay man. So it's an opportunity for you just celebrate with others like you or anyone who respects and supports you. And pretty much it goes back to history, back to Stonewall, where the riots began, and we have to thank that, you know them for starting it for us. And it's just something that, even though we're in 2021, and yeah, we do have like marriage equality and so forth right now, we still have boundaries that we're not protected by that other members in society are. So basically, it's a way for us just to celebrate, have a good time, and you know, make you realize that you are special.
And it's the month of June.
Yeah, typically Pride is celebrated the month of June. Obviously, we like to celebrate at 365, but the history of it is because it all started back in June. So that this is the month that we normally celebrate it in, yes.
How would you say that it is celebrated in Louisville and throughout the state and the region? You know, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but, you know, if you could explain again, you know, what's your area of coverage?
Pretty much, again, southern Indiana, so south of Indianapolis to any part of Kentucky. Ideally, we're more Louisville to, like, Elizabethtown, kind of like the western side of Kentucky, because Lexington also has a Pride Festival, and they kind of take over the eastern side, but anybody is welcome. You don't even have to live in that area, but that's pretty much our region there.
You were saying something about the eastern part of the state. Who did you say tends to have a big Pride celebration?
Lexington Pride out of Lexington, Kentucky. They have a Pride typically in June as well.
Okay, awesome. So what are the ways that Pride Month is celebrated by your organization?
Typically in a non-COVID year, we would have many different events going on, obviously, like we have the Kentuckiana Pride Parade, which normally happens on Friday of our big festival weekend. It's a award-winning parade. And then we would have like the festival on Friday night follow that. And then Saturday we have events going on all day long at the festival grounds. We have family zones for people who have kids, things like that. That way everybody is included. Then we, throughout the month of June, we'd have other things like a Pride kickoff party. We normally wrap up with some kind of cookout, and then we do other things, other events that raise money for other charities or organizations in and around us that support our community.
So you said that's in a non-COVID year. Boy, that seems like a long time ago.
Yes.
So obviously you probably did not do it that way last year. So What are you doing this year?
Last year, you're right, we were canceled due to COVID. This year, we would have been June 18th, 19th, I believe it was. But we weren't sure early on when we started planning if we would be able to even have it. So as an organization, we chose to move it to October 8th and 9th. It's the weekend before the National Coming Out Day, which is always October 11th, to come and celebrate. And I'm happy to say, you know, COVID has kind of, you know, taken the back seat a little bit, so to speak. And some events still will be going on, like this year, June 27th, we're having Family Day out at the Louisville Zoo. Basically, if they go to our website or to our social medias, they can get a discount code, and basically they get discounts for them, for families to come in or just individuals, and then they can also get discounts like with the gift shop and the eateries and stuff throughout the zoo. It's just a day for families to get out and be together and recognize one another.
And you answered one of my questions, which was, were there going to be some events that happened anyway, since the numbers and the vaccines kind of hit a little bit earlier than anybody expected?
Yeah, those things are going to happen. I mean, we might be able to squeeze another one in there, but there are other organizations in town who are also going to do things just to try to recognize Pride Month. But most organizations are pushing everything to the fall.
Sure. So about how many people do you think typically celebrate Pride Month by coming to your events?
Coming to our festival, we average 20 to 25,000 in a Friday night, Saturday type venue.
Cool, cool. That's great. And is there a way that people stay communicating and connecting, as you said, all year long?
Yes, we try to do other things besides just Pride Month. Obviously, again, COVID slowed us down for a little bit, but we are ramping up. We have other events between now and our festival in October. But, you know, we're always willing and able to try to support other groups as well, just not our own. And so we encourage people, if they have a great idea or an organization who wants to partner, that we're more than happy to review it and possibly do it. And, you know, it's all about just giving back and giving to the community.
So this year, this past year, has just been such a different year in more ways than one. I mean, COVID, obviously. Racial protest is another reason. The election, politics. What is it that you think that the... I want to remember to use the phrase you use, because I'm used to saying LGBTQ, and I think you said LGBTQ plus?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. So
yes.
What do you think that the LGBTQ plus community is especially focusing on this year as part of Pride?
That's a great question. I think it's a combination of things. As far as the Pride itself, it's coming together to celebrate. We made it through this dark period. I mean, no matter how you look at it, politics have been ugly. So we've made it through that. We weren't sure if we were going to have our rights taken away, so to speak, and so forth. You hear all these things in the media and so forth. And so basically, I think this year's more about coming together and just celebrating. We kind of beat COVID. We haven't, but it's kind of the mindset that, We're conquering. We're still strong. No matter what we've been through in the past year, we are strong, and we can continue to grow as a group and as an individual.
Thank you so much for talking to me about Pride 2021 in Louisville, Kentucky, and Southern Indiana and the state of Kentucky. I appreciate you.
I thank you so much for having me.
That was Rodney Kaufman, president of Kentuckiana Pride. Now we'll hear from James Alcantara, whose new organization, Black Trans Louisville, serves the Black trans community.
Our mission is to foster a familial environment for Black trans people with ties to Louisville, to help improve quality of life and freedom from persecution and ability to rest and get tangible support. So we were made because myself and other Black trans folks were talking about how we always seem to fall through the cracks, where we go to Black spaces and they may not understand one identity, such as being trans or LGBT, or facing racism and other discrimination in the greater LGBT community. So we are just here out of necessity. We're here to take care of each other. Our goals are to have a space where folks can come, get any resources they need or connections that they may need that we would be able to provide, a space to rest or place to rest or recover and be themselves. And yeah, so we were made in, we started in November 2020, started our virtual community on Discord in January, and now we're here. We've been able to give out more than, I believe now it's more than $1,000 in aid from donations and from my own funds. And we're just working on getting bigger and better and being able to take care of each other and hopefully catch each other before we, you know, fall through the cracks, like I mentioned before.
Well, I know you had mentioned that you started in May 2020, which is one of the things I was curious
about. November 2020, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, November. Okay, you started in November 2020. What made 2020, of all years, the year that you decided to formalize an organization?
I had gone through a lot. I, like, personally and, like, with quarantine and COVID and all this, I think I just ended up getting to the point where I was just tired of it not being there. You know, you end up having to do it yourself. Kind of situation. I'm sorry, I feel like there's like a phrase for that, but I don't remember it.
Right. No,
yeah, like the big names aren't doing good work. Like even if they give lip service or maybe they have a program or a scholarship or whatever, for LGBT people of color or Black trans people in this case specifically, it's still not always welcoming, and sometimes it comes with like a lot of barriers and having to like bend yourself to the whim of whoever is trying to provide that aid or service. And it's more of a like performative kind of thing. On the surface, it may look amazing. But when it comes to the actual lived experiences of the marginalized folks in those organizations, they never stand up to their reputation.
Wow. It sounds like you're trying to address and deal with a lot. Let me ask you this. Can you say about how many people are in your organization or that are in your outreach?
Let's see. Right now, we have about 20 or 21 members. Not everyone is active, but we do have a pretty regular engagement in our virtual community right now. We did have one meetup to celebrate the anniversary of one of our members starting testosterone. Mainly it's been online, and so we have 20 or 21 folks.
So do you feel as if you have a chance or opportunity to connect with the national or regional Black trans community?
So there is definitely larger organizations that we want to get in contact with. There's the Black Trans Fund, which is a national organization, I believe. It's either the Black Trans Fund or just the Trans Fund. There's also No Justice, No Pride DC that has inspired a lot of our goals and our vision and how we operate. And there's also a conference with the Black Trans Advocacy Coalition, which is the national org, and they have a conference, I believe it's next year or this fall, that we will be working on sending a group to as well to get everyone connected, and also just to get connected with different members of our community to see what we can do to better help each other.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
That's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks to our guests, Wanda Mitchell-Smith, Professor Derek White, Rodney Kaufman, and James Alcantara. And thanks to this week's In Conversation production team, Rick Howlett, Laura Ellis, Brad Yost, Russell Wells, and Bill Burton. Our theme song was composed by Kojin Toshiro. I'm Michelle Tyrene Johnson. Thanks for listening.